I'm Fraser Kane. You're listening to the audio edition of Universe Today. If you're an astronomer and you want to escape the Earth's hazy atmosphere, you need a space telescope, right? Well, not necessarily. Sometimes all you need is a balloon and some clear Arctic skies. An international team of researchers traveled to Sweden and deployed a 33-story tall balloon carrying the BLAST telescope, designed to study the birth of stars and planets. Galen Marsden is a member of the team and a researcher at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. Hi, Galen. Welcome to Universe Today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's nice to finally have a chance to talk to someone from my hometown.
Right.
How's the weather there?
Oh, it's pretty nice today. Nice and sunny.
And how does it compare to northern Sweden?
Well, it gets dark, which is great.
Right. 24 hours of sunlight.
Yeah.
So, can you give me some background on the mission that you just came back from in the north?
So it's a balloon-borne telescope. And it carries a 2-meter mirror. I'll say BLAST stands for Balloon-Borne Large Aperture Submillimeter Telescope. So it's sort of all there. We fly in a balloon to an altitude of 40 kilometers. It's a 2-meter mirror, which is fairly large for a balloon. It's nothing compared to ground-based telescopes, but it's big for a balloon and comparable to current satellite telescopes. And we're measuring in the submillimeter, which is sort of a new frontier, I guess. There are a few ground-based telescopes that measure in the submillimeter, but we're sort of the first ones to do it from near space, not quite space. And I guess the advantage to looking at submillimeter is you're looking at, in the case of the extragalactic science targets, we're looking at reprocessed light from very large stars as they're, bright, heavy stars as their first, as galaxies sort of first turn on, you get this huge flash of star formation. And along with the star formation, you have dust, and the dust absorbs the light from the stars and re-radiates it in the submillimeter. So that's what we're looking at.
Now, how does a balloon stand as a platform for having an observatory?
Right. It's a quick, cheap, dirty alternative to a satellite. We're actually sort of piggybacking on the ESA, the European Space Agency satellite called Herschel, and an experiment on board called Spire. We're using the same detectors and a similar mirror, and they will fly, I think originally they were saying 2007, but it will probably be 2008. They'll do a better job than us. They're in space, so there's no atmosphere at all. They'll have a much longer observing time. But on the other hand, it costs 100 times as much and takes 10 or 15 years, whereas, we put this together in about 5 years. So that's the real advantage, is that it's very quick and it's much cheaper.
What other kinds of observations do you think could be done from a balloon-based observatory?
Ballooning is nothing new. I mean, it's been going on for probably 30 or 40 years. One of the most famous ones is the Boomerang telescope, which flew from Antarctica in, I believe, 98 and 2000, but I'm not totally sure. And that's CMB, Cosmic Microwave Background Studies. There's been a whole slew of balloon-borne telescopes studying the cosmic microwave background. And then also it's very common in atmospheric sciences to use balloons.
So you launched the balloon a couple of weeks ago from Sweden, and so where did it go and what happened to it?
Right, so we launched it, I believe, Saturday morning. So first it goes up. It takes about 3 hours to get to the sort of the destination altitude of 38 kilometers. Or actually, we were a little higher than that at first. I think we were closer to just over 39. And then the winds are fairly predictable, these high altitude winds. And this is why we do it from Sweden or from Antarctica, during the summer. The winds are, they go in a circle. Not that we know exactly what it's going to do, but it's it's going to go west during the summer. And it did go west. It ended up going quicker than we were hoping. The wind models were showing about 20 knots, and we were going as fast as 40 knots sometimes. some of the time, which ended up slowing us down. We were hoping to take more than 5 days to get across to the Northwest Territories, and it actually ended up being 4 days. And another problem is that we drifted north, which caused problems because we wanted to fly all the way across to Alaska, but we ended up being too far north, and we had to cut down to Victoria Island instead, which cut off another 18 hours or so.
And so then the balloon came around the pole and then drifted over northern Canada. How did you retrieve it?
Right. So two members of the team, Mark Devlin and Jeff Klein, both from University of Pennsylvania, left Sweden after the first day. So when the balloon launches, we get line-of-sight telemetry, meaning we get full all of the data through a dish, I guess. I don't really know the details of that. So for the first 18 hours or so, we're getting all the data, and we're sort of all looking at it carefully, and it's really important this time that we get everything set up properly so the rest of the flight runs smoothly. And then eventually it passes over the mountains and we don't get that high data rate anymore. And we get a much, by a factor of 1,000 or so lower data rate. So for the rest of the flight, we just had this sort of slow trickle of data coming in. But as soon as the line of sight data was over, Mark and Jeff left Sweden, flew back to Philadelphia, and then quickly left for Northwest Territories. And they were sort of nearby for when the balloon came down. It sounds like a fairly difficult task because it was quite remote, and they had to fly in by a helicopter. They had to cut the thing up into fairly small pieces, from what I understand, to retrieve it all.
Now, if I understand correctly, the submillimeter is at the high end of the radio spectrum, and it's really good for looking at cold objects. So, what exactly were you looking at?
From the beginning, the science proposal stated that we had two cases. There was the extragalactic and then also the galactic. So extragalactic was what I was talking about earlier, these high star formation rates in very young galaxies at redshifts up to 3 and possibly up to 5. And so that was the extragalactic case. And there's also the galactic case where we're looking at, as you mentioned earlier, planet formations and dust in our own galaxy, which is at this point not very well known. And it actually turned out that due to the sensitivity of the telescope being lower than we had hoped, we decided that it wasn't the best use of our time to spend a lot of time looking at the extragalactic sources. So we actually spent most of the time looking at galactic because, they're closer, brighter, larger, easier things to see. In the galactic case, I actually myself don't know a whole lot about the science, because I've been spending my time studying extragalactic. But we're looking at, cold dust clouds in our own galaxy. Some of them will be forming stars and planets, which, at this point is not well known. So many wavelength observations of all these different things, and we're trying to add the submillimeter portion of it. So, you can look at these sources in the radio, although I suspect that you don't see them very brightly in radio, but certainly optical. You see these pretty pictures from Hubble of these dusty nebula, and we're just sort of adding the submillimeter brightness point to that curve to see if we can figure out what's actually going on there.
And do you have any more missions planned? Any follow-up observations?
Yeah, definitely. We're hoping to learn from the things that went wrong here. So we had some problems in this flight. Certainly still got a lot of science, and we're very excited about it. There'll be a lot of good things coming out of this. But we still want to go after the extragalactic stuff. So we're going to spend the next year or so putting everything back together and then trying to get a handle on the things that went wrong this flight. And we're hoping to turn around for another flight in 18 months from Antarctica.
Great. Well, we'll stay tuned and see how that next flight goes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, thank you.
Galen Marsden is a graduate student in physics at the University of British Columbia. He spoke to me from Vancouver, Canada, my hometown. If you're interested in learning more about space and astronomy, check out my website at universetoday.com and subscribe to the daily email newsletter. You can also send any questions or feedback to me at info@universetoday.com. Thanks again for listening.